Welcome to The Daily Diagnosis, a healthy lifestyle podcast provided by Ogden Clinic. We're your prescription for health-centered conversation, stories, and advice. Hosted by myself, Parker Shaw, and featuring the talented providers of Ogden Clinic, you'll reach a positive prognosis for your podcast addiction by listening to The Daily Diagnosis. Thanks again for listening to The Daily Diagnosis. Once again, you're back here with Parker from our marketing team.
And Tim Cook from our marketing team as well.
And Nadine Bakazi, one of the otolaryngologists at the Ogden Clinic.
And we are so excited to be here with Dr. Bakazi. Both Tim and I have had really awesome experiences working with him as our ENT doctor. I mentioned before that he actually worked on me when I had my deviated septum worked on, which is really cool. And he has an awesome reputation and just is fantastic. And we're so happy to get to know you a little bit more better on the podcast. But if you would, Dr. Bakazi, for our audience that doesn't know you, would you mind introducing yourself a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. My name's Nadine Bakazi. I grew up in Southern California, but I've been in Utah for 20 years, so I am a transplant. What's funny is when I first accepted the job in 1999, I had no idea what a snowblower was. And I've subsequently gotten used to shoveling a lot of snow. Now I know exactly what a snowblower does. Yeah, so it's been a great joy being at the Ogden Clinic. I really love my patients. I love the Intermountain West. I went to med school in San Diego, and one of my greatest memories was one of my classmates was Khaled Hosseini, the author of The Kite Runner, famous novel. And what was really funny is his roommate said, you know, Khaled is really into short story writing. Would you want to read his stories? And I said, well, not really, because most med students don't really write very well creatively. Well, that tells you how wrong I was. He ended up being a world famous, author of The Kite Runner, an incredible novel, and a good friend of mine. But we laugh and think back to when I didn't think he'd amount to much. So that was my favorite memory from med school.
That's actually, he's an awesome author. That was one of my favorite books that I was assigned to read in my English literature class in high school. So
yeah, he's actually given up medicine. Well, for those of us that are still left in medicine, it's been just a fun ride in ENT. I love the patients. We take care of all age ranges, from small kids to adults. And probably the most unique part about my job is just people come into our clinic not knowing that we do scopings and things in clinic, and they're like, what are you going to do with that scope? And we're able to establish diagnoses. So it's a fun part of my practice, doing kind of procedures in the office under anesthesia, which don't put people out with a general anesthesia. So it's kind of cool that way. Yeah.
So outside of your work, what do you like to do?
So I am an avid fly fisherman. Describe it like a fly fishing addict.
Yeah.
In fact, so much so that I tie my own flies. And when my cat was alive, it lived for 20 years, I would routinely take small portions of its hair because it had this great hair that would make awesome flies. My wife would be able to look at me and say, have you been shaving the cat down? Because he's missing patches of hair. And it was very humane. He was a great cat, and his flies were awesome.
So maybe you can start like working as a cat groomer as well. You know, you've got the experience.
But it's going to be a patchy look. It's not going to be well groomed. I won't be successful at that.
That's really cool. Where do you like to fly fish at?
Boy, if there's a river that runs through it, I fish it. So here locally in Utah, we have some people don't realize the Weber River and the Ogden are some of the greatest fly fishing rivers around. But I do get up to Montana and Idaho. I'm fortunate to have a place in Island Park, and that's like central hub for fly fishing.
Hey.
The Henry's Fork, the Madison, some of the greatest western rivers and hatches occur up in that area. And I just got back from a trip to West Yellowstone, and we hit the park and really got into some native cutthroats. So much fun to catch them.
That's really cool. I'm sure it's really relaxing as well, just being out in nature and fishing. It sounds great.
Yeah, it's meditative for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Doc, what made you choose ENT?
You know, I think the most telling influence was my dad was an ENT, and I was always amazed with the stuff that he did. I would be very proud of the stuff he would tell me about, the operations performed, and the patients he would help. And then when I started getting into med school and doing the rotations, I was fascinated by the anatomy, all the nooks and crevices and all the things that can go wrong in the head and neck. It was interesting to me. I think, as I alluded to before, you take care of all age ranges, which keeps it interesting. You take care of things from the small, like ear surgery, all the way to head and neck cancer, thyroid cancer. So every day is a little different and keeps the variety going. That's probably the main reasons that I love it.
You did your residency in Southern California.
In Northern. I did my undergrad at UCLA, my med school at UC San Diego.
Oh, I see.
And then I did my residency up in San Francisco, where I had the fortune of meeting my wife as well. She's a pharmacist.
Oh, cool. Cool.
That's really cool.
Is there anything different about the patient base in Utah than you might see in California? I mean, are there more kids that would come to you here than might be in California?
Yeah, I think that's probably the most telling example. Obviously, people tend to smoke and drink less here. Which is another factor. You don't quite see the levels of head and neck cancer. When I was in San Francisco, it had a heavy Asian population, so we'd see particular illnesses like nasopharyngeal cancer, which are high in the Asian community there. But I would say kids is the most telling. You see a lot of kids and a lot of illnesses with kids, infections in the ears and tonsillitis that we have to deal with. So there's a little bit of difference regionally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that actually ties in really well with our topic that we wanted to talk about today. Since you do, you know, work a lot with children, we want to talk about some of the ENT infections that kind of can come along sometimes during childhood that you would see and treat. And I'll just kind of give you the reins from there.
Yeah, awesome. So you can hear the Southern California with the awesome, and for sure. So let's talk a little bit about pediatric ear infections. Very common in kids about 6 months to 2 years old, usually associated with upper respiratory tract infections. So it's very common. Mothers know this, where kids will pull on the ears in their early years of life. Sometimes it could just be a viral infection that goes away, but oftentimes it can sustain
right.
and become fluid and redness and necessitates antibiotics. And that's usually where an ear, nose, and throat physician will intervene, is when the infections become so frequent, more than four or five in a one-year period, where something else has to be done. Antibiotics are just torturing the child's GI system, and that's where we intervene with ear tubes. Ear tubes are phenomenal. In a very short procedure that lasts 5 minutes, you can reventilate the middle ear and get rid of the infection and also get rid of the fluid that can influence speech development. I think that's the biggest thing I'd like to impress upon the listeners, is that persistent fluid in a young kid where they're trying to learn the acquisition of speech can cause speech delay. So you want to be really attuned that if maybe your child's not saying as many words as the other kids in the family or other kids that are around, you may want to just do a very simple non-invasive test called a tympanogram to see if there's fluid in the ear. And in general, getting rid of that fluid reestablishes the learning right away. And that's one of the joys of my life, is seeing kids that have not been speaking all of a sudden start chattering, verbally acquiring, and I see parents really excited about that.
That's actually, if I may, that's exactly what happened to my daughter, and you performed her ear tube procedure. It was manifesting in her not as ear infections, but she had a hard time hearing. She would ask "what" a lot, and she was four or five at the time. And you performed the procedure, and she's been great ever since. She's 7 years old now. What intrigued me, and the results were fantastic, but it wasn't all that often an ear infection, but she just had the loss of hearing. What is the difference there? The fluid in the ear, I mean, sometimes it's an infection, sometimes it's not.
Yeah, so the distinction is subtle. So sometimes you look in an ear, the ear is red and it's infected or it's full of pus. That clearly needs to be addressed with antibiotics or tubes. Other times fluid will be non-infected and just sit there as an amber-colored fluid. It's not causing inflammation or infection, but it's still impeding the transduction of sound across the eardrum. And that's not, if that persists for months and months, that's where you get into a problem with possible muffling of speech. And so that's a subtlety I want the listeners to be aware of, to pay attention to, because it can make a difference in your child's life. You don't want them missing that window of development of acquiring speech, because
mm-hmm.
then they have to be, they're kind of behind at that point. And we want to intervene early in those cases. So the distinction is subtle. You want to get them to a pediatrician or an ENT and make sure that this is not a persistent fluid collection.
And so these are really common, right? Like, or is it just like one in every few?
No, it's common. Because infections are common in kids, specific viral infections, and because kids are exposed to other siblings, school and daycare centers, those are the highest risk areas. So if a child is sick in a daycare center, data shows that most of the kids in that daycare center are going to be exposed and get sick.
Okay.
And so there is some genetics with it, how the eustachian tube is formed. So if your parents have had ear infections growing up, there's a slightly higher chance you can have them. So genetics do play a factor, but getting viral infections frequently, especially in the wintertime here in Utah, is one of the biggest factors.
Okay.
Very cool.
And then to speak just a moment about pediatric tonsillitis, strep throat is very common as well. That's usually in later ages from 3 to 6. And if you have more than 4 infections that are strep a year, it's really important we get that managed, possibly with tonsillectomy if antibiotics have failed. The reason strep is so significant, your body has an immunologic reaction to strep that can really cause major symptoms of fever, feeling sick, almost flu-like. And in the old days where antibiotics weren't used, it would lead to rheumatic fever and kidney damage. Nowadays, we get antibiotics in pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. But if you are you or your child have been getting recurrent strep throat, it's important to get that addressed. It's a pretty pathologic bacteria, and we want to get that addressed with a tonsillectomy if medication has failed. And again, the numbers are more than 4 infections in a year.
Okay.
You actually perform my daughter's tonsillectomy as well. something that struck me afterward, she used to snore. I mean, she's a tiny little 4-year-old girl, and you know, but it was like a freight train almost. I mean, it was really impressive how loud she could snore. After the tonsillectomy, she didn't snore as much. Seemed like she slept a lot better. Is that a common occurrence as well?
Very much so. Yeah, we see that commonly. The tonsils, because they're large and a child's lymph system is developing, the tonsils in the throat tend to be very large and sizable and can influence breathing. Where parents should be concerned there, again, the nuance is if the child is having pauses in breathing. Okay. Snoring is just loud breathing.
Yeah.
Pausing is actually a cessation of breathing for up to 10 seconds. And if there's a pause, that's a sign the tonsils are big enough where they're really blocking the airflow.
That's
and you should
scary.
Get that addressed. It's not going to lead to a child stopping breathing. They'll just wake up and then they won't get restful sleep.
Is that considered sleep apnea at that point?
At that point, it's sleep apnea, exactly.
Okay.
And there's a spectrum there. Sometimes it's mild where it's intermittent pausing, and then there's more severe cases where they're really frequently pausing. But if signs would be if your child's tired in the morning, difficult to wake up. Sometimes attention deficit issues are due to sleep issues at night. Just pay attention to those symptoms. And it is another indication for getting rid of the tonsils when it's appropriate.
Okay.
That's really cool. I had no idea that sleep apnea would be attributed to inflamed tonsils or anything. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Dr. Pekazi, so I also want to ask, what's another really common thing that you see as an ENT specialist?
Yeah, probably one of the most common are sinus and allergy afflictions. We see that commonly in Utah. It's important for people to understand allergies can be properly diagnosed and treated. You just have to come into our ENT office and we do a full scope allergy testing. Chronic sinusitis is probably one of the favorite things I enjoy doing because you can make a tremendous difference in the quality of life of people. People who suffer from sinus headaches, sinus discharge, pressure, pain, or frequent infections are candidates. And we have some minimally invasive ways we can deal with it. Sometimes balloon dilating the sinuses, which is an office-based procedure if you're the right candidate, and in more extreme cases, sinus surgery. But all of these have great outcomes. Management of allergies and then procedural management of sinusitis when antibiotics fail. We're trying to get away from using antibiotics because of the resistance patterns.
Wow, that's really cool. And the balloon thing, is that a newer procedure? Or?
It is. It's been FDA approved since 2005, but it's been really rapidly being done in the clinics for about the last 10 years.
Okay.
Fortunately, we participated in a national study doing some of the early studies with it, and the numbers were compelling. You could achieve the same kind of results doing balloon dilation that you could taking people to surgery. So it's really a convenient alternative for those candidates that are appropriate. You have to be selected for it. It's not for everyone, but for those that are, they can go back to work literally that same afternoon.
Is there a particular time of year when you see those sinus cases spike?
Yeah, classically the winter time, again, associated with viral infections.
Okay.
But you also see it in the springtime with allergies. So unfortunately, Utah has the 4 seasons, so you'll often see it all 4 seasons based on what the predisposing factor is, either viruses or allergies.
Right. Yeah, my allergies are killer right now. And going into the fall, I'm worried for them too. I'm like, every season there's something a little bit different. So
yeah, and that's classic. We see that in Utah, but we can manage it and get it under control so it's not disturbing your quality of life.
Perfect. Well, we're really happy to have had Dr. Pekazi here on our podcast today. And for more information about Dr. Pekazi or on Ogden Clinic, visit us at ogdenclinic.com. And thank you for listening to
The Daily Diagnosis.
Thanks again for listening to The Daily Diagnosis. We post podcasts weekly on Tuesday, and we can't wait to share more of our content with you. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you like, comment, subscribe, leave us a comment in the section below, share with your friends. We really appreciate everything that you do to support us. And if you do have more questions, make sure you visit us at ogdenclinic.com. And once again, we hope that you have a great week. Take care, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.